he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might have...
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, this is the Shame Free Zone, and I'm your host, Veronica Monet. We're already a buzz on Facebook tonight, so if you want to join us, I go under Veronica Monet on Facebook as well, but hopefully we're already friends. We got not quite 1,200 people online, so you can also try to find me over on Twitter, twitter.com/Veronica Monet. Okay, my guest tonight, you may have seen a kind of a theme going on here. I've been talking about birth quite a bit. And I think it's really, really important, and it's kind of under-popularized. I mean, I know Dateline did something about birth, orgasmic births in particular, not too long ago. So I kind of think we're getting to a critical mass here where people are wanting this information. Anyway, tonight joining me is Nicole Shapiro, and she has a website called tantricbirth.com. And she says this, this is a quote from her, she says, "The vision of the tantric birth came to me as I prepared myself to birth my second daughter. I knew I could have a different experience than I had with my first. It was the success of what I learned that has inspired me to spread the word to others and transform the birthing experience for mothers and their families." Nicole Shapiro, welcome to the Shame Free Zone, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you. Now, you're up in Seattle, is that right?
Correct. I'm in Seattle.
Yeah, I'm going to actually be up there towards the end of May, so I'm looking forward to meeting you in person, I hope.
Bring you here. Yes, definitely. I hope so.
Yeah. Now, what exactly did you mean that you were going to have a different experience? It doesn't exactly explain it, and I'm sure a lot of people are wondering what Tantra has to do with birth. So can you kind of give us a little nutshell on that?
A nutshell, you know, when people love to ask me that question, one of my college roommates said, "Could you sum up Tantra birth in 3 sentences? And I said, "Could you sum up Tantra or birth in 3 sentences? what I can tell you is that I've been practicing meditation and yoga and chanting and been around body work my entire life. And I just kind of assumed that that would just, you know, make my birth experience the all-natural, blissful, empowering experience that I imagined that it would be and that, you know, my mom had shown me in videos and such. And that wasn't particularly what happened to me my first time around. So I was very confused. And as many women who have been through birth know, you go through the process of birthing, and then poof, there you are with this little beautiful child to take care of. And so whatever processing I needed to do about what had happened, you know, was on the sidelines while I was taking care of this child and adoring her and loving her. So it wasn't until I was pregnant again and looking at birthing again, and to a certain extent changing my atmosphere, not being in New York City, now being in Seattle, and the climate in Seattle is just amazing. We have a big midwife culture up here, and I tapped into it, and I just started doing a lot of processing, and the big shift really came for me when I got introduced into the sex-positive culture around here, and I started thinking about that I come from what they call a white tantra background, so it was more upper chakras, it was more bringing our energy up into the higher parts of our body and not into the lower parts of our body, and the body work that I had done had always stayed away from anything that really births, essentially. And so as I started thinking about all the wisdom that I really grew up with, I realized that I hadn't ever taken that wisdom to those parts of my body and that part of my psyche. And I started doing that in preparation for my second birth. And it was a completely different experience. And I had to confront a lot of stuff. You know, I had to really get clear that these were parts of my person and my life experience that I hadn't ever, you know, really looked at with the same degree of consciousness that I had looked at most of my life with.
Can you, with that, I don't know how much of your own privacy, you know, you want to divulge here, but can you give us maybe a couple of specifics? So, like, what kinds of things were you looking at?
Well, purely one thing really was just becoming aware of this part of my pelvic floor. I was brought on as an anatomy teacher for a class that we teach here in Seattle and traveled a bit called Clitoral Revelations. And
taught by my good friend Terry Chockey. Yeah, I love her.
Exactly. Created by Terry Chockey, and she started bringing a few of us on to teach with her. And when she and I met, she recognized my science background and my anatomy background and how comfortable I was to talk about the material, and she asked if I would start teaching with her. And what was amazing to me was, despite all of my anatomy background, I knew very little about the pelvic floor. So I just became ravenous. I started looking into every anatomy book I possibly could and really trying to visualize this part of my body and bring my consciousness to this part of my body. So that was one application. And that's something that I do with my clients now, is I have them all with my tantric birth clients, is I have them get anatomy books, and I want them to become aware of the fact, I mean, the pelvic floor, the number of muscles in the pelvic floor is just phenomenal. And these muscles all have to move away, you know, move to the side so that the fluid can pass through. And I don't think anybody really thinks about that. And as a body worker, what I knew was that the way I put it is, I would never give somebody a deep tissue massage the first time I meet them. And definitely not in the most intimate, deep places of their body. And that's what birth is. Birth is, for most women, this extreme experience for all of this tissue that's barely been visited and barely been thought about. You know what I mean?
Right.
Sense?
Exactly. Well, I think that was
one way. Yeah.
Okay. So basically, you start, and Terry Chockey's, but for the listeners who've never met, Terry Chockey is a licensed therapist who teaches about sex up in Seattle, and it's amazing, amazing workshops. She often has live models, and they use something that was developed by Dr. Banner called a pelvic viewer, and it's this plastic contraption that holds the vaginal walls open so that you can actually look at the pelvic floor and also see where female ejaculate comes from. So she teaches us very much about the G-spot, the pelvic floor, and it's not hands-on when you take the class, and, like, you don't touch the models, but it is kind of a three-dimensional learning experience, because you're not only studying things on charts and graphs and slideshows and in a book, but you have live models that are actually showing you what it looks like in the female body, live and up personal. So it's transformative. You'll never, ever see your body the same or your lover's body the same if you happen to go to one of these clitoral revelations taught by Terry Chockey. So I'm sorry, I had to say
sure,
something about that since we brought her up, and I am such
yeah.
a big fan. So I get it. You take this class, it transforms your world very much like it does a lot of people. And then where do you go from there?
You mean me, myself, or
a
general person?
No, you.
Oh, me, myself. Oh, yeah, no, I actually didn't take the class. She asked me to teach the class.
Oh, she were you a model, or you were instructing it?
No, I came in to teach about the muscles, because Terry Chockey doesn't have a science and anatomy background. So, you know, she created this phenomenal class based on all these books that she had read and what she had become aware of. And as she started talking to me, she realized that I had specialization, let's say, in something that she didn't really have. And so she was like, would you come and teach this with me?
Ah.
So I think we have another one on March 28th, and then I think it'll be my fifth time teaching it. So now she teaches, like, the history and sociology section, and I teach the anatomy section. And then we still have the models, and we still have the hands-on, like, session where, you know, you see ways to touch a woman that are respectful, basically.
Okay.
So then what happens? So I go into this big thing about really becoming obsessed with the pelvic floor and really starting to understand it and visualize it. And I guess one of the contra components to that is not just learning it in my head, but then it becomes a part of my body knowledge. So as I learn it, I start thinking about it anytime I'm having sex, anytime I'm walking, anytime I'm doing yoga. I start thinking about all these muscles, and I start, you know, having body-mind dialogue with this part of my body and saying, you know, we're going to open up and we're going to do this again. And what starts to happen when that happens is, you know, any kind of psychic or emotional stuff that I need to process through started coming out. So that's another part, and this is part of why the word is tantric, is because this is all the weaving. So tantra means to weave, is that it's not just a physical experience. None of our cells are not just physical. There's all levels of what's happening for us. So I got some big healing around prepping that way about my first birth, and really got in touch with some anger that I had gotten in touch with through the birthing experience that I thought meant that it was a failure on some level. And what I gained from, so what I did right is I start becoming aware of this part of my body. I start becoming aware of the emotions and the psychological stuff that's trapped in these parts of my body. And part of that was this, my first birth. And in my first birth, I got very angry at the process of birth. But what the wisdom that I can harvest, I harvested from that through the work that I did, was I needed access to a level of anger that I had never had before that birth. There's
you need access to, I'm sorry, hold on, I want to repeat that again. You need access to a level of what?
Of anger.
Anger.
Of
okay.
Anger.
So, now
even
this is very... This is fascinating. So, what does anger have to do with tantra and birth?
Well, I mean, the reality is that if we are in our whole selves, right, we experience emotions full and fiery wherever we are on the spectrum. And I had, for whatever reason throughout my life, suppressed when I would feel angry. You know, I tended to, if I got angry, cry immediately. You understand what I'm saying?
I'm kind of speechless here because I actually teach a workshop that does this very thing. And one time it's a sex coaching workshop where couples actually come and have sex in the room with me coaching them. And I actually coached a woman who had been blocked. She couldn't female ejaculate for 6 months. And I had her screaming an angry no while she orgasmed, and she finally could ejaculate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's funny because we have an orgasm ejaculation panel as part of the Clitoral Revelations class, and one of the women, that's exactly what happened for her, too. She had to scream no, and then she flooded the room.
Isn't it amazing? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's so hard for a lot of people to get, but it's like you want to have some, you know, amazing orgasmic connection to life, you better get connected to all your feelings, even the ones that you think are quote-unquote negative.
Exactly. Yeah. And what I also say about that is in order for me to discipline my child in a whole way, I needed to have access to that anger. And when I say access to it, what I mean is not be in denial about it and therefore have it run my parenting, but have access to it and be able to be centered in it so that when it comes up, I can utilize it in a way that actually is grounded and not abusive.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. And you know, looking at your website here, actually, you know, Tantra, meaning to weave, to compose a connected whole by combining various elements or details, and birth, the act or process of bearing or bringing forth offspring. And I know one of the favorite, you know, way that you love to sign off a lot of your emails is here's to woven, is it woven beginnings?
Yep, that's right. That's what I have.
Sorry, what?
Yep, that's how I have it set up on my phone, that it says here's to woven beginnings.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, what I say is that when we birth, we get to open ourselves up to our fullest expression of the unique divine in order to bring forward a new unique expression of the divine. So that's the beginning. So if we can come to it in a way where we, so the other part of Tantra, so there's the red Tantra and the white Tantra, right? So there's that I started practicing ejaculating, which relates to pushing out a baby, which was like mind blowing when someone told me that. I was like, oh my God, well that makes complete sense, because quite frankly what they often say in the hospital is just feel like you're pooping. Try and poop. And when I heard that, I was like, what are you talking about? When I heard it as a doula, I was like, how can that possibly be the same thing? So when I learned that ejaculation is a way that people around the world have actually practiced in order to then be able to push their babies out, I was like, oh, thank
wow.
you. So now there's a way that, so these are the kinds of things that I could practice in my life before I was ever in the birthing room. So I had access to it. And so what happened was, and I also did, my husband and I practice birth canal massage. So some people will call it fisting. And what's been talked about in the birthing world before is perineal massage. But when I was pregnant with my first baby, I said to the doctor, you know, I want to practice perineal massage. And she said, oh, yeah, well, the research shows that doesn't really help. And I was like, what? How could it show it doesn't help? Like, I totally was, how could that not help? How could it not help to ready the perineum for a person? Well, when I started, again, thinking about the pelvic floor more seriously and actually really, you know, what I'm trying to help people understand is it's wrapping my head around this part of my body. And that's not something that I think very many of us actually sit down and do, is wrap their heads around their pelvic floor, their genitals, their womb. So it's like as I wrapped my head around it, I thought, oh, well, of course the research shows that it doesn't work, because the common practice for perineal massage to ready yourself to have a baby is to use two fingers. Well, tell me what the size of the head is that comes out. So
right.
It's like, of course two fingers aren't going to show that the pelvic floor gets more ready to have, or the vaginal canal gets ready for a baby to come out. So we started practicing, you know, stretching me out and getting, and it wasn't just the process of stretching me out, it was also the process of me getting used to what those sensations feel like. So that it wasn't this complete, you know, blow my mind out of the water, what is happening in my body experience when the baby was actually coming to.
So these are things that... Yeah. Nicole, these are things that you're doing on the second birth.
Correct.
Okay. And can you give us a little reference? And like, I mean, I'm thinking a lot of people would think, well, you've already had a first baby. Aren't you already stretched? Aren't you already experienced? Isn't the second baby always easier?
Well, the irony is that my first birth, the labor was 19 hours, and the second, my labor was 2.5 days. So what they'll tell you is that nothing is ever exactly as it seems when it comes to birth. But I can also say that my first baby was 8 pounds, 5 ounces, I think, and my second baby was 9 pounds, 8 ounces. And where I felt like I saw the success of what we did is that she crowned the second she crossed my pubic bone. So what that means is that, I mean, it was like I knew how to push, I knew how to open, and she just flooded my birth canal, basically. There wasn't any, I wasn't fighting it at all. Does that make sense?
Yet you're saying it took 2 days?
Well, because the 2 days part is the labor part. It's not the pushing and getting the baby out.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And that has, I don't know exactly what that has to do with. I mean, she was a fairly sizable baby, and I'm not all that tall. And both of my babies, for whatever reason, have been twisted in a way inside of my womb that then means that they have to turn more in order to then come down. So once she turned, it was just like shakum, shakum. You know, she just came out really easily and really fast with no tearing. And most people, if you tell them you have a 9-pound, 8-ounce baby, they just assume you're going to tear.
And you did not tear?
No, not at all.
And you did not need an episiotomy either?
Oh, no, definitely not.
Wow. Wow, so you had a bigger baby and no tearing, no episiotomy. What about painkillers, epidural, anything like that?
Oh, no, no. I had my second baby at home in a tub.
In the tub, like a hot tub, a bathtub?
It's a birthing tub. It's like a really deep water hot tub, basically. You can find the mom can move around in it and get a lot of, you know, the buoyancy helps a lot with the pressure.
Wow.
And then actually my husband got in with me. So that's another part of the Tantric Birth mission is to weave the family into this picture so that dads don't feel so alienated to the process or just expected to be able to cope or understand what's happening, but that they get actually recognized as being, you know, also a part of this transformative process that's happening, and that they require attention and respect, and their vulnerability needs to be addressed. You know, this is a huge event for everybody involved. It's not just a huge event for the mom and the baby. So my husband was present, and he came in the tub with me at the end, and he was actually pushing against my back while I was pushing against the walls of the tub. And at moments when that happened, I actually felt absolutely no pain. It was really, really amazing.
Wow.
And the pain of birth, the pain of laboring and birth is really overstated. It's not to say that it's not present, but it's this whole body experience is what's happening. And a lot of what those of us in the birthing world are trying to bring attention to is that it's pain is one component of what's happening for women, but we don't have the context really in our society for all that's happening for the woman. So it's yes, I was in pain, but I was also like larger than life, and that's not something I even really can have language for. But what my hope is that we can start the conversations earlier. Ideally, I like to work with couples before they even conceive, partially because there's some body work that we can do in their pelvises and abdomen and stuff to try and free up where the womb will be going as the womb grows. And also, tantrically, there's stuff that the couple can be doing or the family can be doing to help build the intimacy and help build the connection before they actually birth, you know, before they actually conceive of a child. And then there's the nuts and bolts of, okay, you say you want to have a baby. What's your insurance like? What kind of birth do you want to have? Are you able to have that kind of birth in the town that you're living in? Who are your care providers? Let's get to meet them. Let's get as much of that nuts and bolts stuff out of the way before you conceive so that then when you're in the pregnancy can really be this process of beginning your family. I mean, your family really begins before the baby comes out. And let's get you guys ready and start actually having the conversations and integrating all of this huge transformation that's about to happen for you. so that by the time you end up in that birthing room, it's not just another, it's not just like, oh, okay, today I'm going to give birth. Like, you've really wrapped your mind around what's going to happen and connected yourself with the people that are going to be present, connected yourself with the body, you know, the parts of your body that are going to be involved in the birth.
Right.
And hopefully processed out some of the stuff that, so that if you revisit it in that birthing room, it's not brand new.
So we're going to check into Facebook here for a minute. First of all, I just want to say one of your fans, Robin Lynn, posted, Nicole is a powerhouse, and her work with Tantric Birth is just what the midwife ordered.
Hi, Robin. Thank you.
And then I put a question out to, for people, and you know, and I put this question out there for the listeners too. And if you do want to call in, you can call us in at area code 530-413-4515. That's 530-413-4515. So the question was, do you remember being born? Has your mother shared stories about your actual birthday? What was it like? Happy, sad, scary, joyful? What about orgasmic? Share here, and I'll read it live tonight during my radio program. So we've got Linda Groundwater. She's actually a friend of mine, and she lives in Australia. And she says, I don't remember a lot of stories about my own birth aside from my grandfather having to drive my mom to the hospital and there not being a name picked out for me because they were not so sure I was going to be a boy. My father finally named me, something I'm always proud of. On the other hand, I tell my son's stories about his birth, and while as a teen I'm sure he doesn't think about them, someday I hope he remembers how happy I was every second thinking I was going to meet him in person, even if I wasn't terribly happy during labor. We've got something here from Lyndon Vincent. Says, I was born in my parents' house, and my grandparents, uncles, aunts were there. My younger brother was also born in the same home, and I, as a five-year-old, was part of the whole deal. Very cool experience. So much love around. Not like a sterile hospital room where one's first memory could be a slap on the ass, perhaps setting the stage for how one may look at life. And then he says, have a great show tonight. Then we've got Eddie Weinstein. Eddie Weinstein says, my mother has told me on several occasions that I was born shortly after she enjoyed her favorite Chinese meal and went into labor after laughing when she was walking down the hospital corridor and had to stop to watch the babies in the nursery. No wonder I loved Chinese food and became a clown. So I didn't find too many references to orgasms or tantra there, but they did sound like mostly happy births, which is great. What do you think about the admonition in the Old Testament Bible that curses the human race that they will have to give birth with pain? Do you think that that's kind of poisoned our minds and caused us to not be open to the idea that maybe birth could be a pleasurable thing?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that some people reference that when they think about it. I also just think to a certain extent, you know, we live in a world that likes things to be black and white. And if we can wrap our minds around pain, you know, I have a good friend who's a pain researcher, actually, and I was trying to get clear from her, like, what does that mean? Like, you actually, when you're testing people in pain, you actually have like a physiological experience. You know, can you tap into some physiology that tells you for sure that this is pain? And her answer to me was, no, it's always objective. Which just says to me that even what that word means, you know, and so if you're getting into texts that have been translated, what that word means, it can even be the problem. You know what I'm trying to say?
I do, especially for, you know, for those of us who have any, you know, friends or maybe ourselves, any kind of association with BDSM. I mean,
right.
one person's pain is somebody else's pleasure, and in fact, if you're into BDSM, then pain is pleasure.
Right, right. So
right.
I think the word sometimes has a bad rap. I mean, it's not, you know, there's lots of stuff, like I studied Chinese in college, and you see it with lots of different languages where, you know, a word doesn't have a proper translation in another language. One of my favorites from Chinese that I brought up when I was teaching the oxytocin class is the word for good in Chinese is actually mother and child together. If you look at it written, it's the character for child and the character for woman together.
Wow.
And oxytocin is if there is a hormone to wrap up the experience of what's happening when mother and child are bonding, and it's also what makes your uterus contract, it's oxytocin. So what I was trying to say in the class is that when in Chinese, when you say hello, you say ni hao, and hao is the word that means good. And so they're actually saying, do you feel like you felt when you were in your mother's arms? Do you know what I mean? Like, good for them means, are you having that feeling right now of when a mother and a baby are holding each other?
And that, you know, that a lot of religious art is, you know, there's the Madonna and the child.
Exactly.
Then if you go back to pagan cultures and Egyptian cultures, you'll find the Madonna and the child way before there was a Jesus and a Mary. So that has definitely been with us for quite some time, the idea that it's it evokes a lot of good feelings.
So when people say good, do they think that? And so in the same way, when people say pain, so even if the Old Testament, right, you said it was the Old Testament, is saying, you know, that this is the, you know, the curse, and women are going to always have this pain. Is it even what we think pain is? Is that what it was even being said, really?
Absolutely. And I, you know, I've actually kind of experimented with pain and been able to block it, just, you know, mentally, just decide it's not going to be there, and then also to be able to transform it so that, you know, it goes from being something painful to something pleasurable. So I think we have a lot more ability to you know, work with that than probably most of us think, especially, you know, when you think about biofeedback.
Yeah, there's all sorts. And all I can say is that in my experience of the two births that I have had without any medication, is that it's this overwhelming bodily experience. And with tantric birth, what I'm trying to help people do is be in a situation and then try and facilitate the labor in a way that women can be as open to that bodily experience as possible. And my experience with the second, with my first, was that I had to do so much running around Manhattan, going to the doctor back home, to the doctor back home, to the hospital, going into labor, going into triage, hospital, triage nurse, asking me questions, then going to labor and delivery, dealing with all of that. Like, there were all these things that I had to process that were keeping me away from just this overwhelming bodily experience that was happening.
The second time around,
I got to change that whole setup and just do it at home. And there was some dealing with my older daughter was a little bit on my mind. But other than that, I could just be in this experience that was happening to me. And in the process of being with this experience, like, how many women can say they've gone through 2.5 days of labor and can't, and like, I want to do it again.
Wow.
And I want to do it again right after it happened. Whereas with my first experience, I was like, what was that? Who invented this? Whoever invented this hated me? So for me to go from that type of thinking to, wow, that was the most, so it's not this, like, you know, in the same way that, like, a really deep tissue massage can be, or a, you know, really deep yoga transformation can be, or probably, you know, some amazing BDSM experiences. It was just this, like, rock my world, totally blow my mind experience that I can't ever replicate if I don't do it again. That might have been my one and only of that type of experience for my birth. But if I can help anybody have something closer to that, in my mind, that's way superior to what most of us, what most women are going through right now.
Most women are basically drugged. They're not showing up for the birth at all.
Yeah, and I think part of that is because people don't talk this part of it up. You know, I mean, when the movie Orgasmic Birth came out, which is another thing that happened around the same time that I met Terry Chalky, like a lot of these pieces all came together, and it was just like this puzzle that I was like, oh my God, how has this never been related before? And how have people not already been talking about this? Now, another thing that happened right before I got pregnant, I met a woman who is I'm from Hawaii originally, so I was home, and I was meeting with this woman who's Samoan, and she's very much in the Samoan culture. And long story short, she helped her aunt with the midwifery care within her community, and they were able to predict the time that a baby was going to be born, naturally. And I was like, my mom and I completely could not believe this. And it was 15 minutes off.
15 minutes off?
And when we questioned her, she looked at us like, what's your problem? And I said, well, you know, I could tell. So she said to me, well, we've been massaging her all week. Like, as though, like, what's your problem? Like, really? You don't think we know what we're doing? And so what I saw was women have had a certain type of wisdom and passed down a certain type of wisdom within certain communities, but we don't all have access to that because it's not in our greater community right now. So when I, in my first pregnancy, went to look for it, I just kind of assumed that, you know, I was pregnant, and now I'd start finding out all these things and find all these people, and they'd help me facilitate having this amazing, you know, birthing experience. And what I found was that it just really wasn't there. So when I had this experience for my second, I was like, well, I got to start talking about it, because someone's got to start talking about it, and someone's got to start... You know, many of us, as this woman who's a 30-year veteran Lamaze teacher who took the oxytocin class in Honolulu said, is we can't let the secret die. And right now, it's a bit of a secret. Women don't know that this can be this phenomenal experience that just rocks their world in every way, shape, or form. They don't know it.
And let's see if we can kind of hone that down for people so that they'll have some understanding of that. Because, you know, I had broached the topic on Facebook a couple of hours ago, actually, about that you and I were going to be talking about how women can be empowered through giving birth. And I know that when I was watching Ricky Lake's film, I'm sure you're familiar with the documentary, and all of a sudden
the
name... What is it? The Business of Being Born.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The contrast between the woman who has a natural birth without painkillers and how she feels afterwards. She's elated, she's high, and I know she says something like, I feel like I can do anything now.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's like this real sense of accomplishment and also a sense of personal power, not just as a human being, I mean, absolutely, positively, I mean, as human beings, women want to feel that they can, accomplish things that men can accomplish. But I think really connecting with the power of being able to give birth and to do so consciously so that it's not just being cut out of you or dragged out of you while you're drugged up, so drugged up you don't even really know what's going on, but that you're actually there. Facing whatever fears you may have and coming out on the other side. And just, it was amazing how much elation these women had. They and their babies seemed to be so happy. I mean, most of them weren't even crying. They weren't fussing. They were just as happy outside the womb as they appeared to be inside the womb. It was for me just really amazing to see that, you know, online, the videos online that I looked at. But I'd like for you to tell the listeners what it is you mean about, you know, what secret are we talking about, and what exactly is it that's empowering women?
Well, the secret that this particular woman was talking about was that you can have a calm birth. She was speaking about, you know, how it's shown on TV to be this, like, you know, really emergency type situation with all this craziness going on. And for her, at least, and with what she's supported women having, that it's actually this very calm process. And part of that came out of oxytocin. Is now, there's a woman who wrote a book called The Oxytocin Factor, and she has done a lot of research on oxytocin. She was a mom and became an MD-PhD to try and explain how she felt while she was nursing. And she says, we talk a lot about the fight or flight system, and now we need to talk about the calm and connect system. And so that's the specific secret that she was talking about. And the secret that I'm talking about, and this, like, blow-your-mind experience, again, it's really hard to put in language. But what I can say, what I do say, is that I felt larger than life. And in the book The Baby Catcher, which is a great book written by a woman who is a midwife in San Francisco, she says, you know, women's bodies have to become big enough to make more room in the world for another life to come in. And that's what it felt like. I mean, that's what it feels like. It's like in the process of being pregnant, and you get impregnated, and your body gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then in the labor, it was like I got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and then this baby comes out. So in the process of getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger is whatever gets in my way of being bigger. Does that make sense? Like, being bigger in the world, having a greater presence in the world, accessing whatever emotions that come up through the process, accessing whatever psychology comes up for me throughout the process, and being able to move into that and through that. But in order for women to be able to do that, they have to even know that that could happen. Most women don't even think that that's going to happen to them. And then to be able to make the choice as to whether or not you want to confront that and whether you want to move through that. But it's not in the conversation.
Yeah. So, I think that kind of goes back to the whole thing about having your anger, learning to connect with your emotions, such as anger.
Lot of the difficulty that I was having, and when I say difficulty, I mean, the baby came out, you know, it wasn't like, I mean, what's the difficulty? The difficulty is what's going on inside of me while this is happening, right? Was that I couldn't face the rage that was coming up for me. I couldn't sit with it. I couldn't be present for it. I still was in this paradigm that it was a problem for me to experience that type of anger. And it wasn't until I did the processing that I needed to do for my second baby to come that I recognized what a gift that was, that I now had access to that anger, and how important that was going to be for me to be able to, as I say, be the mother bear with my cub.
Yeah. Yeah, I think women, you know, it'd be interesting to see what your take on this is, but to me, women have been systematically stripped of all of their power. So, you know, we've got this absolute obsession with youth so that the crone, the older woman, you know, is not valued in any way, shape, or form. So right there goes a huge chunk of power. I mean, men don't even become president until they hit their 40s, 50s, 60s, sometimes 70s, and, well, not necessarily 80s, but we have elected presidents in their 60s and 70s as well. So men are seen as being wise and viable. at a time when women are in a lot of ways, you know, relegated to the sidelines. We don't, you know, we don't invite them to be on TV. We don't invite them to speak. We don't invite them to show up publicly in too many capacities if they hit a certain age. And so that's one way that we definitely take power away from women. And then, you know, the other way, of course, is by medicalizing the birth process so that it is owned and operated by the hospital staff, the doctor, you know, and now a lot of births are being planned, like, oh, I'm going to go have my baby at 5 o'clock on Tuesday. So, you know, there's not even an effort to show up for the birthing process as it naturally occurs, but just to cut the baby out. Now, it's my understanding that if you cut the baby out, it actually has some developmental impact on the baby. Is that true?
Well, there's a lot that the baby's, like, for instance, the lungs go through another stage of development in the process of birthing the baby out. Michael Odent has written a book called Primal Health. He's written quite a bit, and he's a big proponent. I think he's in both The Business of Being Born and Orgasmic Birth. I know he's in at least one of them. And he's a big proponent of natural birth. And he talks about the struggle. You know, that life is a struggle, and if you take out the struggle from the process of birthing, then how is this child ready to struggle in the world? And that's one way to look at it. And then there are specific physiological things that happen for the baby throughout the process of birthing. But to address what you were talking about empowerment, that's what I'm trying to say about we don't even have a conversation about it. I mean, I love what you're saying about the Crohn thing and, you know, bringing that into the conversation. And I keep saying, like, where are the grandparents? Where are the elders? Like, I'm a mom. I've never been a mom before. I'm doing the best I can. Well, my mom's got to work her butt off to just survive, you know, so she can't really,
right?
Like, you know, she can show up with her wisdom here and there for me, but I feel like as a culture, we've stripped ourselves from our support, really, by, you know, whatever, however it's worked itself out, but this is how it's worked out. So I kind of come from that perspective a lot of times. I'm like, okay, well, whatever has happened, this is what we need to do now. What we need to do now is we need to bring the conversation back, and we need to bring consciousness to birth. There's been a lot of fear about birth for whatever reason. And now we need to take the fear away and bring consciousness to birth so that we can start, if we can bring consciousness to birth, then maybe we can actually start learning how to do this in a way that is more beneficial to our society. I mean, our numbers aren't good. We're having more and more C-sections in our country, and our infant and maternal mortality rates are not going in the right direction. So,
For a developed Western nation, we're doing horribly with infant mortality.
Right.
So, I don't know, I'm not exactly where we rank, but I know that there's even underdeveloped nations that have a better birth survival rate than the U.S.
Yeah, and that's a lot of what Marsden Wagner, who wrote, he's also in those movies, and he wrote a book called Born in the USA, and he used to be the head of the World Health Organization's, I can't remember the exact name of the title, but it's basically their birthing sector of the World Health Organization. And that's a lot of what he was trying to bring attention to, is if you look at the epidemiological studies, we are not in good shape, and I think the quote he says in the movie is that women are dying in the United States because our C-section rate is so high. And that was based on looking at the epidemiological studies around the world and saying they came up with a number. They said, look, it seems like if your number is somewhere between 10% and 15%, that's ideal. So if we're in the 30-plus percent, he says, then there are women and babies dying in our country that should not be dying. The problem is, what I think part of the problem is that we've taken a road of becoming disconnected from our birthing experience. And so how can we harvest it for wisdom if we're trying to disconnect ourselves from it? Does that make sense? If I want to not experience the pain of it, if I want to not even have it go through my birth canal, excuse me, then how am I going to learn anything that's going to help the next generation do it better?
Well, and I think people are so afraid of having an authentic connection to the thing of life. I mean, it's like, well, oh my God, we're just so distracted with technology and making ourselves busy nowadays. So people got headphones stuck in their ears from their iPods, and you know, they got their BlackBerry that they're texting on, and the computer that they're sitting in front of, and if they're not doing that, they're doing the TV, and everything's just kind of distracting them from their own bodies and their own feelings. And people can kind of go through life that way even and just not really connect. And here's this amazing thing. You're actually in a physical body on planet Earth, and there's a lot of amazing things that could be happening, you know, from sex with a real-life human being instead of online porn, to actually showing up for your baby's birth. And that's not to say that, you know, some women don't need to have drugs for one reason or another, or have to have a C-section for one reason or another, but I do feel that we're really cheating ourselves from a full expression and a full experience of life. And one of the things that comes to mind for me, actually, is my own miscarriage. I've never actually given birth, and so I don't have any natural children. I have stepchildren, but no natural children. But I did get pregnant one time in my whole life, and not until I was 41, if you can believe that. And I miscarried at the three-month mark. And what's really interesting to me is that, you know, I remember taking Lamaze classes with a girlfriend of mine who was pregnant. I was going to be her birth partner, and until she decided that I wasn't because of the fact that I was working as an escort at the time. But that's another story. Anyway, there was all this focus on having to teach women how to breathe, and when I started miscarrying, my body just, you know, it took over, and it was like, you're going to lay here and breathe. And I couldn't help but think about a cat that I raised from a kitten who ended up having kittens of her own. And when I was a teenager, I watched this cat give birth, and, you know, they breathe hard. And I thought, well, God, it's like nature's just taking over. And it had a really nice, gentle rhythm to it. It was uncomfortable in the sense that it felt a little like I was cramping, you know, kind of like your period. But on the other hand, there was some comforting sensation as well. And I don't know if that was the oxytocin or what, but I was definitely not you know, having an experience that was frightening or painful. Now, after I passed quite a bit of placenta and I thought I was done, a whole week goes by and it turns out that I'm still totally dilated and there's still placenta up there, so I end up having to go get a D&C, you know, dilation and curettage. And in my case, they didn't have to dilate me because I was fully dilated, but they ended up injecting some kind of anesthesia into the cervix and gave me some pain pills and then proceeded to vacuum it out of me, and it was just, you know, with the bright lights and the stark hospital walls and this machine sucking away at my organs and the needles poking and prodding, it was just a horrible thing. I was in tears, and when they got done with me, I threw up. And I contrast that, and thank God that procedure's there, because, you know, if they hadn't been able to vacuum that out of me, I could have died from, you know, I'm trying to think of the, you know, when you get infected internally. But still, it's mechanical, it's man-made, and it's incredibly harsh. And, you know, I can't help but wonder about the women who are going through the episiotomies and the epidurals and thinking that they are somehow or another avoiding pain. So what do you think about that?
It's just controlled pain.
Right. Exactly. So you don't have to surrender. You don't have to give up. You don't have to let go. And you know, I work with people who can't orgasm because they don't know how to surrender and let go. Seems to be
well,
kind
and
of
so, you know, that's exactly, you know, that's the thing, is it's like, I don't really, this is what I'm trying to say about we have to just even start the conversation and just bring consciousness to this, because what is birth is so huge that nobody has any, I don't think anybody has the answers. But what I know is that there are some of us, you know, including the women in those movies you were talking about, that have had a different experience. And that, we want to bring more attention to that experience and start talking to people about that, so that the women who might want to have that experience feel empowered to have that experience and feel that there are people that they can go to help facilitate that for them.
So that we're hopefully opening up more choices here, huh?
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
More choices and more supported choices. You know, I think what happens right now, I mean, this is a lot of what I hear is, well, I want to do it naturally, but if I can't, then I'll get an epidural. And, like, that's where it's left. And, like, somehow, and so I use this example, I use this parallel, you'll like this one, is, you know, just like everyone just assumes you're going to know how to have great sex because you're alive, people just assume that because you're a woman, you're just going to know how to have a great birth. And that just might not be so. We might need to talk about it. We might need to move through stuff. We might need to bring consciousness to it. We might need to learn about our bodies and learn how to be in our bodies. And I mean, all I can say is it's the most ever I've been in my body. I mean, it's, you talk about power.
Well, and just to give folks a perspective here, I'm, you know, from your bio here, I see that you've been practicing white tantra since you were 3 years old. So one would think that you would be super embodied. So, if how does one start practicing?
Well, and that's the white versus red. I mostly was I was practicing white tantra. No one in the United States was going to talk to a 3-year-old.
Yeah, but 3 years old. 3 years old? I mean, what were you doing? Meditating?
Yeah.
At three?
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. I don't know that I've ever heard of preschool meditation.
Yeah. Well, if you remember in the 70s, you know, there were a bunch of gurus that came over from India, and I happened to be one of the lucky people that met one, and uh-huh. My mom decided to follow that path, and so that's what I was raised in.
You know, you also said that your voice was feeling just a little bit hoarse tonight. And I see here that you have sung in operas. You're a very mm-hmm. interesting lady. Were you singing in an opera today or yesterday? Is that why your voice was a little under the weather?
I'm a little under the weather because I have 2 children and there are constantly bugs going through my house. But, yeah, and the opera thing, you know, the opera thing even comes into the birthing. You know, this is how I feel like doing this is finally all of the pieces of my life coming to the work that I need to do on this planet. And the funny thing is even the opera comes in. There's this, they say, open throat, open yoni in birthing. And there was some stuff that I had to do while I was birthing my first child that I said to the OB when it was all over. I finally figured out that what you were trying to get me to do was just relax. She wanted me, my first baby, she, for whatever reason, didn't want me to actually allow my body to push her out. So I say I spent an hour and 45 minutes not pushing. When everything in my body was trying to push this baby out, I was supposed to not go with it. So what she wanted me to do was when I was having a contraction, not push. And then when I was having a contraction, I was supposed to not push. And when I was not having a contraction, she was saying to push. But what she actually meant was for me to just let go. So when I told her that, she said, well, yeah, and most, she said, I couldn't believe you could do it because usually people can't do it unless they're opera singers. And I think that's very funny because, and what we're taught, what she's talking to is the pelvic floor. And when you're studying opera, in order to really get that full sound, you do engage your pelvic floor and open up your pelvic floor to a certain extent. Again, people don't really talk about it. You know, it's, and it's like I was saying about, you know, finally bringing, it's like I have 32 years of, or let's say 33 years, no, how many years? I had 31 years of white tantra experience that then got to feed my now 2 years of bringing red tantra into it. Because no one talks about red tantra. No one in the United States is going to openly discuss that. I mean, we're slowly changing that.
So and red, but it's just for our listeners, the difference between white tantra and red tantra is what?
I think of it as white tantra being the upper chakras and red tantra being the lower chakras, and I'm still learning exactly what all of this means, and I'm sure there are other people that would tell you different things, but it, that's how I think of it in my mind, is that all of my kundalini, opening my kundalini, paying attention to my kundalini had always been bring it up, be in your upper chakras, be in your third eye, be in your sahasrara, which is on the top of your head, and this is red to me is bringing it down and bringing it down into my first and second chakra. And that second chakra is, at least from my understanding, it's power, money, and sex. And letting all of that kundalini energy that I've been harvesting and getting in connection with and letting it go into those aspects of my life and those areas of my life as well.
Huh. Well, you know, we're coming up, we've got a few more minutes here, about five actually, but let's just talk a little bit about the services that you offer. I want to give you an opportunity to let you. I'm over here on your website right now. Again, that's tantricbirth.com. And if you happen to be over at Facebook, I've already posted that for your convenience. You can go over to upcoming classes and events. And I see here that you've got something in Seattle on the third Sunday of every month. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., this is going to be the Building Your Sex Positive Family. And I think you're going to be doing that with my cousin, Alina Gabosh. Is that true?
That's true.
That's awesome. And you want to tell us just a little bit about that? Maybe does this have anything to do with birth, since it's about a sex positive family?
Well, what it has to do with birth is that I, what I see, you know, and again, through the work that I've done with myself, is that I think that the fact that sexuality is under the shrouds of shame is debilitating women from being able to open this part of their body up and have a great birthing experience. So what Alina and I are trying to facilitate is a discussion to talk about how do we raise our children without sexual shame.
Awesome.
How can we have these conversations in a way that's not shaming sexuality? And it really is a question, and it's been really phenomenal to start getting different perspectives on how to do that.
And this is going to be at the Little Red Bistro on 400 Dexter Avenue between North, let's see, Harrison Street and Republican Street, and it just happens to be free. And then I see you've got another thing coming up on March 27th from 2 to 4 p.m. It's $20, and it's called Connecting the Dots. You said, guess what, sex and birth are related. You want to learn more about how a woman and her partner can facilitate a more empowered birth by enjoying a more engaged, conscious, and embodied sex life, you should attend this class. Now, does that talk about a little bit about the fisting and ways to stretch the yoni?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sexuality and birth. And I get into, it's a little bit also of a, like, how to, what does tantra and tantric birth really mean, and changing the whole paradigm from thinking about everything as purely physical and showing how all of these things are related, interrelated, and how if you're in a fully tantric, you know, if you're in this tantric sexual experience, then you're practicing being in a tantric birthing experience, basically. If you can be with your partner and all the sensations that are going on and all the stuff that's coming up for you and being present for it while you're engaged in the intimacy with your partner, then you can you have more access to that during your birth.
So really, I mean, just like we're talking about, you know, wanting to aspire to a joyful, perhaps an even an orgasmic birth, but certainly one that's empowering and awe-inspiring, requires showing up for maybe the edge of our discomfort, you know, where we're a little bit triggered and we maybe want to run away and don't want to have certain
right.
feelings, certain emotions, certain sensations. And likewise, great sex requires that too. When as you go further into Tantra, and if you're wanting to deepen that sexual connection with another person, it really does take you to a place where you're up against your own fear and discomfort and uncomfortable emotions.
Right.
Yeah.
And the way I see it is how I'm glad that I did that, and I feel like I'm more prepared to be a mother by doing that.
Right. And you're more fully alive.
I think my mom says, you don't get an epidural when you're a parent.
Yeah, really.
There's no epidural for that one.
Yeah, although some people try to turn those PlayStations into one, don't they?
Yeah.
I see you've also got Clitoral Revelations in my favorite class, which is going to be on March 28th. From 12 noon to 5 p.m. at the Sharma Center on 406 Dexter Avenue. This class is only $125. I've got to tell you guys, it's really, really well worth it. And that's going to be starring yourself and your friend Robin Lynn, who already quoted, I quoted her from Facebook tonight. And then, of course, Terry Chalky. So, and you're going to be doing the musculature for that, right?
I do all the anatomy.
All the anatomy.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I mean, anybody that's even taken it before, we change it every time. Like, this time around, we're talking about this G-spot that everyone keeps talking about, and we've got new information.
Now, you mean G as in grandma?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. Are you guys working with the A-spot and the U-spot yet? I don't know if you knew that this last year that hit the New York Times, everybody was talking about the two brand new erogenous zones. And really, it's just A is for the anterior side of the cervix and U is
right.
for the urethral sponge. Excuse me. It's actually the tissue surrounding the urethra on the exterior of the vulva.
Right. Well, that's kind of what we're trying to bring attention to is that, and again, this feeds into birth, is that it's all sensation, and it's all of it, and we want everybody to learn how to explore all of it and all of its fascination instead of getting myopic about a spot and trying to find a spot. What you
right.
can do is get more knowledgeable about yourself, more knowledgeable about women, and venture there, and as Terry, one of my favorite Terry quotes is, more research is needed.
Yes. Well, I am going to have to take us off the air now, but this has been just a wonderful interview, and I'm so happy that you're doing this work, and I hope you will send my love to Terry and Alina especially. Is there any closing thoughts you want to leave our listeners with tonight?
Just thank you. Thank you to anybody who listened. I hope somebody got something from this and would love to hear what people thought about what I had to say. And let's just keep the conversation going.
Okay. Well, you know, a lot of times Facebook keeps going for another couple hours after I've gotten off the air, so I'll let you know what comes through.
Thanks so much, Veronica. Thanks so much for everything you're doing.
Thank you, Nicole. And I look forward to meeting you in May.
Same here.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. 1-800-273-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you.